This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Emmerich, CPA with Parmelis and Associates. The time has come and the big, beautiful bill has passed and has officially been signed into law. Some of these changes that are exactly what we've been expecting and even talking about, and some of these are things that have come out of left field. And a lot of this is we still need clarification on. But that and everything else that you need to know about the big, beautiful bill, how it's going to affect you, how it's going to affect your customers, and what you should be doing, if anything, is exactly what we're going to talk about this week. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Remember, if you want to hear your question answered on here, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Want to talk to me about services that Parmelis can offer to your repair shop? Shoot us a text at 301-307-5413. And lastly, but surely not leastly, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors. If you need to hire the next rock star for your team, like a lot of other shops and a lot of other listeners, give Promotive a call so they can get the next rock star for you. If you're looking for a full-service staffing solution that does everything from sourcing, qualifying, creating job descriptions, scheduling interviews, to negotiating job offers, Promotive is your answer. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. When I was talking about this episode, and this is a 900-page bill, and I kind of joked about this, the big, beautiful bill, but that is literally what this is called. Believe me, I'm trying not to get political here. I know that there is a lot of stuff in this bill. We are not talking about Medicaid cuts. We are not talking about immigration. We are not even talking about the new language laws for truckers or anything like that. This is a podcast where we talk about business and we talk about numbers. So again, you might have your own thoughts on, you know, other things are in here. I have my own thoughts on it. We're not going to talk about it. Let's talk about taxes. We talked about this and I was looking back on it probably about 2 months ago because Trump had been very adamant that this needed to be passed and this needed to be signed on his desk by July 4th. And by golly, they did it. I believe that he signed this on July 4th. And like I alluded to before, there is some stuff where we talked about and we were expecting it to happen. Some of this stuff is existing things were in place. Some of these were campaign promises. And some of these are just really, really popular things that it's like, there's no downside to this. I think they're going to do it. Some of this is promises. Some of this is stuff like tips and overtime that I didn't think that they were going to be able to do. And then the last section on here that we're going to talk about this week is, I wasn't expecting this stuff. You weren't expecting this stuff. And a couple things on here where if they leave it alone, they're going to have some major issues. To back all this up, let's talk about where this stuff stands. This is signed into office, or this is signed into law. All the stuff that we are talking about, this is the current rules as of today. That being said is when they pass this stuff, a lot of it is they pass it. Hey, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. How that's going to happen, how it's going to get funded, and the actual IRS laws around that stuff sometimes aren't even written yet. Some of this cut and dry, like we'll start off with child tax credit, that is probably done. I'm not going to say guarantee it's done because they could change anything on here. But what they've done here, we already know how to treat it. We've seen a child tax credit in the past. They already have the phase out on it. We're not going to talk about that again. When we get to some of the stuff like gambling losses, I think that is going to change. But again, we're going to talk about what we know today. And I want to give you guys, like always, actionable items that you can use in your business and also in your personal life. Without further ado, let's start it off. And I'm going to be honest, guys. I'll tell you what I thought was going to happen. I'll tell you if I was right or wrong. Let's start with the ones that we knew about. Child tax credit, QBI deductions, bonus depreciation, and what we will call the SALT limitations. Child tax credit, if nothing changed on this, if this big, beautiful bill, which is the official name, I should give the official name, which is OBA, One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I mean, it's hard for me to even say it, and I'm laughing because it's just so ridiculous, but it is very common for them to have a headline kind of grabbing title to this. If you remember, you know, kind of the major bill that Biden put out there was called the Inflation Reduction Act, which was hilarious because if you look at inflation before that act and after that act, but yeah, you get the meat. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act, OBA, addressed a couple things that needed to be addressed from 2018. 2018, the original Trump tax bill on this was probably the largest change in tax code that I had seen in my career. Some of these things like child tax credit, QBI deduction, bonus depreciation, All of those were set to expire this year. If no change was made, some of the stuff that was made temporary in 2018 was going to sunset and go away. Let's start with the stuff that's easy. Child tax credit, it was going to go down to $1,000. They maintained it. We are going to still have the increased child tax credit. Great news on it. You can get $2,000. Again, is that going to change your personal life in any way? No. If you're thinking about having a kid or not having a kid, child tax credit should make no difference on this. What does that mean? That means that this is not something that is going to change my behavior on it, but in the back of my mind, I know that I should have a similar tax picture on it compared to last year. Yes, this is a change on child tax credit because it was supposed to go away, but essentially for your purposes on it, it is going to stay the exact same as what we've been seeing before. So the other one on here that you guys had been aware of, you guys have been using, and probably one of the most popular deductions created in 2018 is the QBI deduction, or the Qualified Business Income Tax Deduction. The way that it works was, if you make $100,000 in your shop, you do not have to pay tax on the entire amount, whether you know it or not. The QBI deduction, and there's limitations to this that are often not hit for repair shops, but if you make $100,000, you only pay tax on $80,000. Like I said, it is a very, very popular one. It does not actually even, there are certain businesses that don't even get this. I think for the most part, it's written pretty well. Now, one of the things that I was hoping to see change, and I unfortunately have not seen this, is accountants. We don't get QBI deductions. Accountants, lawyers, architects, a lot of professional service industries don't get that. Personally, that was my biggest gripe with QBI on it. I don't think that I got my wish. I still don't have QBI. The good news for you guys is you do. The way that it was supposed to go is the QBI deduction was actually set to go away. It was not a permanent set aside on it, and it is here to stay. One of the things that they were trying to do, and we talked about this when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is it's currently at 20%. They wanted to try and increase this. I saw proposals up to 25%, but the last time I saw it was 23%. While we didn't get the full 23% deduction, it did end up going relatively unchanged. It's at 20%. There is some differences on phase outs because if you make too much money, it starts to phase out on it. From an actionable perspective on here, really what we're seeing is status quo. Most of the increases that I saw on it on phase out limitations really just have to do with inflation. A phase out number, meaning if a person makes more than $300,000, that number shouldn't be the same and is not the same anymore for 2018 compared to today. Is this majorly going to really change most shop owners' personal tax returns? No. Like I said, most of you guys are getting this QBI deduction. Most of you guys are not getting phased out, and I don't expect that to be any different. There's two big ones, the bonus depreciation and the SALT limitations. The bonus depreciation in 179 is probably the biggest change that you guys weren't even aware of because you probably didn't realize it was going away. The way that this works is in the past for bonus depreciation, you were always able to write off for last 6 years, 100% of whatever you purchased. Even if you use 179 in here, you guys have been pretty much used to being able to write off, you know, non-real property in the first year. The way that it was currently written right now is all of that was going to sunset and the bonus depreciation was going to go down to 40%. Long story short, you can still write off everything like you could before. And there's actually some more stuff that you can write off now in an accelerated manner that we were not able to in the past. We'll talk about that a little bit later because I do not think that most of you will actually get that benefit there because it is pretty limited to people producing things, production and manufacturing side of it. The last one on here that we're going to talk about of essentially stuff that we had seen around that we had been on our radar is truly the one that is going to affect you guys the most. And you guys were not expecting this, and that's the SALT limitation. As you can tell on this is they love acronyms here. OBA for the bill, SALT. But what SALT stands for is state and local taxes. Before 2018, if you had $100,000 in real estate taxes, another $100,000 in state income taxes, you were allowed to write off that entire amount on your federal income taxes. By virtue of a number of things on it, it has become a hotly political topic because if you want to look at Republicans to Democrats, generally the Democratic states with higher income taxes and higher real estate taxes were actually getting more of a federal benefit because they were getting to subsidize the cost of that. In 2018, you went from unlimited caps on real estate taxes and income taxes to a flat $10,000 cap. That is a massive, massive change for high-income people and high-tax states. It has been something that has been argued. It is the reason why a lot of states have created the pass-through entity taxes. Because in the past, you didn't need a pass-through entity tax because you were already getting a deduction because you're able to itemize. But once a lot of people lost the ability to itemize on it, states said, hey, here's a way that you can pay us your tax outside of it personally and still get that same benefit. There were talks of keeping this the same at 10,000. There were the talks of getting rid of this cap altogether. But what we have is a much increased cap up to $40,000. As of July 3rd, if you paid $35,000 in state and local taxes, you could deduct $10,000. As of July 4th, you can deduct $35,000. You can deduct $40,000. You can't deduct more than that. That is a big, big, big help for you guys. If some of you guys are doing the math in the back of your head, a lot of my clients just on the real estate taxes alone are already at that SALT limit, which means that all of those personal income taxes that you paid are not deductible, which is the reason why we had a lot of you shifting it over to pass-through entity taxes. You might be thinking in the back of your mind, well, Hunt, is there still an advantage of doing pass-through entity taxes when we have this increased threshold? And the short answer is maybe. If you're paying a couple thousand dollars in pass-through entity taxes, you probably will not go forward because you're going to be able to just pick that up on your itemized taxes. If your pass-through entity taxes are tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, there's still going to be a savings opportunity because you're still going to be limited. The big unknown here that we're going to keep our eye out on that, and so are the states, is the IRS actually came out, I think 2020, and said, hey, we know that your states are trying to set up these pass-through entity taxes. We've never actually given you guys a statement on it, but we're okay with it. We realize why you guys are doing this, and we do not mind. There is a big argument or a big consensus here that might change. They realized that there was an opening in the past, and they realized that, you know, there was an opportunity to have some savings. The general consensus here is the IRS could look at this and say, guys, we were okay with you guys doing a pass-through entity tax because we know we set that limit a little bit too low. Then we increase this limit to $40,000. Are they still going to be as open to these states charging this? Maybe not. We will have to see. Let's go into some of the campaign promises because these are the ones we knew about, kind of expecting. These are the ones that had been promised to us, whether or not we thought they were going to come to fruition. And then, like I said, lastly, we're going to wrap this up with stuff you never even expected. We really have four different campaign promises here that I highlighted a couple weeks ago. Three of these came through and the one did not. Let's start with the one that did not come through. This was not floated that much. This was kind of talked about a couple times, I think on really just the ways and means aspect of how do you expect to afford some of these things? Now, again, like I talked about before, publicly, the millionaire tax was how they were going to balance the budget on this. Hey, you're doing a lot of cuts on this, but we were going to do, I think it was like a 2% tax on people over $2.5 million. Publicly, it was very, very popular because 99.9999% of the population and people voting would not have been affected by this. Privately, I'm sure that the millionaire tax to every single person that donated to either sides of the political aisle here were absolutely against this. Also, think about the politicians. They were absolutely against the millionaire tax. It's always floated. It's very, very seldom put into place. As you've seen on the news, most of these cuts actually ended up coming from social programs and Medicaid, which could not be more of a polar opposite. Those are not publicly popular. And yeah, that's been one of the probably biggest sticking points of this, of why so many people are against this bill. The good news is on that one is that's probably just a major downside to that. Most of you guys on here would not have been affected by the millionaire tax. The good news is they did not put it in place. There is some other things on there for state taxes, high income things. Again, we do not see really many changes on the tax rate other than some income changes and phase out limitations. That leaves us with three different campaign promises that you might realize now have all actually come to fruition. No tax on Social Security, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. Those were the promises. And like I said, more or less, they did it. But obviously, there is some fine print on here. Let's start with the simple one. No tax on Social Security. This was actually a tricky one because they weren't able to actually achieve this. You cannot just change the tax code, apparently, and not have Social Security be taxed because, as you might imagine, it has much larger implications on this. What they did is they gave an additional below-the-line deduction, meaning essentially look at this deduction just like you would interest or charitable contribution. It lowers down your taxable income. It is not a tax credit. But essentially that below-the-line deduction for $6,000 for elderly or people on Social Security in effect does the same thing. Is Social Security taxed? Yes. But will you pay tax on Social Security if that is your sole source of income? No. Again, if you want to come out and say, hey, that was not delivered on it, I would have to technically agree with you. Social Security is still taxed. But at the end of the day, do you care if it's taxed if you don't actually pay tax? No, you don't.
Are you tired of spending endless hours searching for the perfect talent to join your team? Promotive is your full-service automotive staffing solution. At Promotive, we believe in being more than just a recruiting agency. We become an extension of your team, working tirelessly to ensure we place the right talent with the right shops. With our always-be recruiting mindset, we're constantly seeking out the best professionals in the industry. We manage 90 to 95% of the recruiting process, taking the burden off your shoulders. When you partner with Promotive, you gain a dedicated recruiter and account manager who will work closely with you, understanding your unique requirements and seeking out candidates who fit seamlessly into your shop's culture. We'll ensure that every candidate we present is thoroughly vetted and aligned with your needs. With Promotive, you'll have a peace of mind knowing that we're handling the recruitment process with expertise and precision. We don't just match resumes, we match character, culture, and long-term success. Visit our website at gopromotive.com today and experience the power of Promotive's expertise and dedication. Together, we'll build a stronger and more successful team.
The tips in overtime are two of them that I said, I get it, I like it, I love the idea behind it. How the heck are you guys going to do this? And there's no way that you're going to do this in an unlimited manner. And I was right. They are not going to do this in an unlimited manner. And they also aren't even going to have it affecting you guys. What I was concerned about with, and if you guys remember back into, you know, the Obama administration days, is they had some breaks on businesses where you guys did not need to pay the full amount of payroll taxes. It was a cool idea. Logistically, it was an absolute nightmare because it put that burden on you guys of calculating this stuff. Yeah, it was not a time I would like to go back to. I was thinking it was going to be the same exact thing on tips and overtime. I thought you guys were going to have to report this, but it was going to back it out. You guys weren't going to have to pay the payroll taxes on it and all the things of those like. That is not what worked out at all. From a business level, tips and overtime look exactly the same. You're still going to be paid the same amount of FICA. You still report it the same way. The rules are exactly the same. Nothing has changed for you on a business level. Personally, though, what happens is you have a $25,000 offset for either tips or overtime income. Now, technically, I think, you know, and again, this is where we need clarification on it. By the way that they've written this right now, if I have a technician that makes $100,000 on salary, they are going to pay tax on $100,000. If I have someone that makes $100,000 and 25 grand of that was tips and 25 grand of that was overtime, the way that they currently have that written, that technician is only going to pay tax on $50,000. What it would actually show is it would show the full 100 grand, and then you would have a deduction. Like I said, just like charity, where it's like, yeah, you made 100 grand, but you're only going to be paying tax on 50. Because the first 25 of tips and the first 25 of overtime are not taxable. Is there going to be other things? Is there going to be income phase outs on this? Is there going to be a big rush of shop owners or really any business owners shifting over to an overtime-based pay plan, tip-based pay plan? Absolutely. When I look at this, the tips and overtime and probably some of the things we're going to talk about in 1 second here, this is our biggest planning opportunity, guys. If you look at all the stuff that we talked about on here, the SALT limitation, the increasing of what you guys can deduct is probably going to make the biggest impact, but there's no planning opportunity there. You're already paying those taxes. We now get to deduct them. You're not going to change your behavior. On the QBI deduction, you're not changing behavior. That hasn't changed. Same with 179. Same with a child tax credit. Tips and overtime are a big planning opportunity that I have my eye on here, and we're already kind of working through some different strategies. But more or less, if you think about it, your technician, your service advisor, your administrator does not care what it says on that paycheck. If we can get a way to get that payroll to our team and they are going to have the first $25,000 of the tip and or overtime not taxed on it, we better find a way to do it. Now, like I said, they've opened up this can of worms. I'm not the only one looking at this and licking my lips of saying there is a big opportunity here. But like I said, I'm not jumping on this because we are going to see some clarification. And also, their rules haven't been written. They said you do not pay tax on the first $25,000. There's going to be a lot more fine print that's going to come along with us to give us some more guidance on it. It's still going to be there, though, guys. We're still going to have an opportunity here. But what I'm saying is I'm not going to jump up and I'm not going to convert to tips right now. I'm not going to convert to overtime right now because, again, there is some more implications here we need to think about. To wrap this up and kind of give my thoughts on this, we got to go down through some of the stuff that we didn't expect. And some of this, and I have question marks next to it, because I do not think that it's going to remain as they have it written. This is the one I've heard people yelling and screaming about the most. It's a pretty niche one on here, but for some of you that are gamblers, you might know that you are allowed to deduct 100% of gambling losses up to your winnings. So let's say that you lose $150,000 in gambling. Can I take any of those losses last year? No, I can take zero. But I can offset any winnings that I have. I make $150,000. I get a W-2G for my gambling winnings, and I lost 200 grand. I can't write off 200 grand, but I can write off 150. My losses, if they outweigh my winnings, I'm never going to pay tax on this. A big change that they just came out with that is buried in those 900 pages is gambling losses are now limited to 90% of your winnings. Let's say that you went out there and you won $100,000, you're going to get a 1099 or W-2G that shows, Hunt, you won $100,000. I'm the worst gambler in the world, so I easily lost another $500,000 the rest of the year. In 2024, my income is going to be zero. I have $100,000 of income. I have $500,000 of losses, limited to 100. It washes out. I don't owe the government any money, and obviously I'm broke because I've lost a ton of money here. Current laws, I've still lost the same amount of money. I'm still broke, but I can only deduct 90,000 of that 100,000 of winning. I can only offset 90% of it, meaning whether you win or lose, if you gamble, you're always going to be paying tax to the government. I just can't see this staying the same. Think about the amount of sports gambling. Think about the amount of online gambling that is taking place right now. Yeah, this is going to be something that is unfairly taxing people, and that's probably why I think it will change. The IRS does not like to tax people that don't have money for obvious reasons. If you tax someone that doesn't have money, they don't have any money to pay you, and you know that you're just kind of creating a future enforcement problem. Also, Las Vegas, the gambling community, have very, 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 very good lobbyists on this, and they are not happy about it for obvious reasons. What does that mean for you? Should it change your behavior? I mean, probably. If you have an issue where you are gambling this much on it, I'm probably not going to have a ton of sympathy on the tax side of it. I can commiserate with it. But yeah, if you've been gambling that much, I probably would stop. Other than that, though, I think that probably the more positive side of this is if you do gamble that much, I'm hoping that they're going to roll this back and you're going to still have 100%. But what we're doing internally for our team and our clients on there, if we see that you've had gambling winnings, if we know that you gamble, when we do your tax estimate, we're going to bring that in there. But again, I don't think that's a certainty. So if I'm looking at this and I'm discussing this with my client, I would probably say, I think we're going to owe 40 grand. If the gambling stuff stays the same and you have the same winnings as last year, it could be like 70, but I'm probably not going to plan for it. It's out there. I'm probably going to set that money aside. I do not want that to be a shock if this does not change on there. But the other side of this is I think they're going to change that. So let's talk about another one. Again, it did not make the front page because we haven't seen this long. It's 900 pages and there's more clarification on there. But without us knowing, they made kind of a weird change to meals. If you remember, meals have really been kind of neutered on the deductions. We used to have meals and entertainment, 50% of that. Entertainment has gone away. And as it looks right now, they've kind of taken the meals away too. The way that they've written it, it says on-site meals are 100%, but it is limited to essentially oil rigs, fishing vessels, and none of that has to do with anyone that listens to it on there. what a lot of people are asking is saying, is this the end to all meals for employees? And also the way that you guys wrote it, we also lost that 100% deduction for having on-site meals for our clients and things like that. I don't think that's the case. I think it might just be kind of an oversight and it might be an addition to it. In practice, you guys probably already abusing this meal stuff anyways. When they changed the rules on meals, I didn't see anyone lose a deduction. I just saw you guys change where you deducted this stuff. Is it a big concern on it? Probably, maybe, but probably not. The last three on here, we're not going to spend a ton of time on because we don't have a ton of information. And I'll be honest with that. But they are all cool ones. I think that two of these will absolutely affect every single one of you guys. And the last one is a really cool one that will affect a small amount of you. But if it does, it could be really, really, really cool. Let's start with the first one. They're called Trump accounts. I don't know. That's just what they're calling these things. Essentially, what it is a non-IRA IRA. It allows you to invest money for your children, grows tax deferred on this. Think about like a 529 plan that does not have to go to a college. That's more or less what this stuff is. Does it give you a tax deduction? No. Is there limitations on what you can use it on? Yes, absolutely. But really, at the end of the day, guys, this is like a Roth IRA with a lot more different use cases to it. Do I think that this is a planning opportunity for most people? Maybe, but probably not. Like if you're looking at this and you're not maxing out your 529 and you think that your kids are absolutely going to go to college, I'd be still probably putting money into a 529 before I'd be doing one of these Trump accounts, just because I do get state tax deductions on it. For these ones, though, it's absolutely a really, really kind of cool legacy plan for your children or next generation. If we put this money in over 18 years, currently right now, the limitation is $5,000. And after they turn 18, they're allowed to take that out tax-free. If that is the case and they're still around on it, yeah, I think a lot of people would be interested in this. But we've never seen this before. They've never done this before. They haven't written the rules on it. And will it actually come to fruition in the way that we think it is? Maybe not. Car loan interest. This is the one that came out of left field. I heard them talk about this. I wholeheartedly am against this one for a number of reasons. But probably in this industry, it's good. But we can now write off car loan interest. More or less, it is the same like you're writing off mortgage interest, but you're allowed to write off up to $10,000 of car loan interest. There is a massive issue with car loans. There's a massive issue with people that are behind on car loans. There's a massive issue on interest rates on here. I don't see how this is helping people. Yeah, you're writing off a high interest car loan on it. If you're looking for the tax savings of a high interest car loan as kind of the way to balance the budget, okay, but I don't know. It doesn't really seem to make much sense to me to incentivize people to finance a vehicle when I think a lot of this is probably people driving and financing vehicles they can't afford, but that's the American dream, I guess, isn't it? It's there. It's $10,000 on it. Will it still be there? Yeah, probably. But there's going to be probably some more stipulations on that, some phase outs. How many cars can you do it for? The one big thing on here that I will put on there is the car has to be final production in America in order to get that deduction. Do you even qualify for that or not? Again, these are too early to tell, and we won't see this stuff till next year anyways. This last one that I'm going to put on here is something that I didn't even want to include because like I said, 98.999% of you is not even going to be something that is on your radar. But it is close enough to this industry that I'm hoping it becomes more of a possibility for the rest of you guys. What it is, something called qualified production property. We used to heard of qualified improvement property, qualified real property. There's a lot of different things that are qualified. But let's talk about what qualified production property is. So we've never seen qualified production property in the past. And what is it? Qualified production property, like you might imagine, is real property, meaning real estate, that you use to produce, manufacture, or test, and a couple of different things. Let's say that you're manufacturing tires. A couple of my clients do retreads and things like that. You are a qualified production property. How does that affect you? This is why I put this on here, because this is pretty crazy if we're going to be able to do this. But essentially, what they're trying to do here is they're trying to stimulate domestic manufacturing. This is directed at trade steel production. Let's say that I am a domestic producer and I have that QPP. I have that qualified production property. And in this industry, like I said, the most common thing would probably be something like I'm making retreads, I'm remanufacturing tires, I don't know, something along those lines. If I was to buy a $5 million building in 2024, I would be able to deduct the real estate portion of that, not the land portion, and I would be able to deduct that over 39 years. So let's say it's $3 million, you divide that by 39, and you take a little bit of that every year for 39 years. It's nothing to get excited about. And what I always tell people is real estate is probably a good investment, but is always a terrible tax deduction. Currently, after this has come into effect, if I am a qualified production property on there, that $5 million building, I can write off the entire cost in the first year. That is a major change that we have never really seen accelerated depreciation for real property. The reason of why I'm bringing that out there is you guys are probably not qualified production properties right now because you guys are doing services, you guys are doing trades, but arguably you guys aren't really producing or manufacturing. Some of you guys have some aspects of this and some of you guys might be able partially, but really I'm putting this out there is I hope that it is going to be something that is going to come into our industry. The trades, the production, the domestic aspect of this, they have a big push to bring this back inside. They have a big push to bring this back inside of our border. Your businesses, especially on the residential side, probably aren't very close to trying to get some of those benefits. But where I think about this is like my diesel guys and the fleet shops out there, all of your customers are going to kind of be getting this benefits and kind of getting this treatment. And sometimes what we see on tax law is it goes towards a specific industry. And then what they realize is in order for us to have the effect that we think, we can't just give this benefit to this industry, but some of the ancillary industries that kind of go around it. Gambling could affect you. I hope it doesn't. Meals probably won't affect you, even though it might technically should. Trump accounts, you know, in the kids' IRAs and things like that, might or might not. Car loan interest, yeah, probably will. Most of you guys have some sort of car loans and the production on it. You never heard of it. You might not ever hear about it. And I hope that we do. What does this all mean for you as a business owner? What should you be doing differently? Well, first and foremost, we need for the dust to settle a bit. They rush this. I do not want you to rush your decisions or your changes because there are going to be changes and there is going to be clarification. Furthermore, some of these, like I said, have just been approved, but they aren't actually in place and we don't have any rules like the Trump accounts. Do I expect there to be changes regarding the tip and overtime rule? Yes. And I think there's a big change and we need to look at the implications before we make any rash decisions. Do I think that most of my clients will save money? Yes. And then really the biggest thing here is that SALT limitation like I'm talking about. The high income clients that I have just on that SALT limitation will save an average of $15,000 in taxes just by that change alone. All in all, I think this is an overall positive impact for the average shop owner and arguably probably for their team and customers as well. As always, please share with friends. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listening apps. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.